Monday, when the family's away, Alf's gonna play. And it could be risky business.
Did you eat everything in the house?
Including Lucky?
It's a furball.
I was hungry.
Will Alf be accused of caticide Monday?
And welcome to Alfsplaining with me, Ben Baker.
And me, John Matthews.
And this is very much the programme that always has cat endangerment very much firmly in mind.
Not like that, ladies and gentlemen. It's all safe.
As we'll learn very quickly, this is obviously a programme about Alf.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
The sitcom that ran from 1986 to 1990 in America. We're not experts. We're just fans. And we're watching these episode by episode just for a bit of fun, really, because, you know, why not with the world and etc. And there's a lot of cat-based tomfoolery. Is a tomfoolery an acceptable word here?
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans is probably a more suitable, isn't it? Mm. Because this is an episode. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. But it's called Looking for Lucky, which would give it away if you know who Lucky is, obviously.
Mate, truth.
But maybe you shouldn't. Three episodes in. I don't know.
I have the German DVDs of this, which I'm watching.
It
seems to have been... Alf seems to have been released sporadically around the world in various unfortunate edits, and the German DVD box set's apparently the best one. But in Germany, this episode was known as Katzenjammer, which seems to be a much more sensible episode title.
Well, as far as I'm aware, Katzenjammer is a headache, or a hangover, rather. A headache from a hangover. We use it. Because wails of discomfort, wailing cat sort of thing, you know. I think it's apparently means lament of a cat.
Yeah.
And in Norway, apparently it's used to describe low-grade music and instrumentation, which in Germany would be called Katzenmusik, which is, wait for it.
Go on.
Music by cats.
Incredible.
So that's your next project taken care of there.
I think we're all learning something as well, aren't we?
Yeah.
We didn't think this podcast would be so educationally informative, but people will remember that now and people will be able to tell their friends.
I mean, let's just be clear, it's educationally informative about Alf.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty high grade.
I mean,
of educationally informative.
Alf was always on the high grade.
on an unrelated matter, all the episode titles of Alf are sort of, in English, referencing songs from throughout history.
Yep, Strange in the Night last, yeah.
The thematic link between them. Yes, yeah, Strange in the Night being episode two.
Episode one was Alf after Alison Moyer, so it all checks out.
Exactly,
yeah.
It all pans out. According to this German DVD I'm looking at right now, episode two wasn't called Strange the Night in Germany. It was called The Night the Pizza Came, which sums up an element, a plot point in the episode.
Yeah.
And not particularly the most important plot point of the episode either.
No, very much not. I would say very much a minor.
It was a very minor element.
But, well, you know, fair play.
I don't wish to go back to last week's episode. I've suddenly...
I feel you do.
You know, you could edit this into last week's episode if you want.
No, it's but gone I was out. Just, everyone's heard it now.
It's just struck me that... Why did Alf give the pizza back?
It's good, man.
He stole the pizza from the shelf and then gave it back as a sort of... Because, I mean, maybe he just appreciates a good visual gag all the time, but, you know...
I mean, that's part... I think he appreciates the gaslighting.
Yeah. Well, we'll watch out for this. It's another thing, another thematic thing to look out for then as we watch these episodes.
A thematic theme.
A thematic theme, that's it, yes, is Alf gaslighting people.
You may have to have a counter on that one. I could tell you, Looking for Lucky was directed once again by the not at all comically named Peter Boners.
Round of applause, please, for Peter Boners.
He got 15.1 million, 23rd most watched of the week, so it's going up.
It's going up, it's improving.
You know, two more million than the previous week. The writers of this, Robert Bendinson, to give you an idea of his quality, he says on Wikipedia, he's written for a number of TV series, including ALF, Home Improvement, and two episodes of The Simpsons. Season 12, Simpsons Tall Tales, the Connie Appleseed parody, which, as I recall, is bloody awful.
Yeah.
And season 13's Blame It on Lisa, which I cannot even remember.
No. You know, seasons 12 and 13 of The Simpsons were very much in that hit and miss era, rather than being the later miss era and the earlier hit era. It was a transitional phase for The Simpsons.
And indeed for the Bennetsons. Apparently, Bob Bennetson, Robert, yes. If you don't know him personally, was a supervising producer on Coach, leaving after its fifth season to become co-producer on Home Improvement.
Well.
He wrote and directed the as-yet-unreleased film Big Bug Man, which contains the final performance of Marlon Brando.
Big Bug Man? Well, I never.
Yep. So there you go. And Howard Bendinson did much of the same, but he also worked on Space Cats, which was Paul Fusco's thing after ALF.
Oh, yes. That's something I keep meaning to look into, but I haven't yet, so...
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, so facts and information. None of it about ALF.
No, we've gone a long way into this so far, and we haven't even mentioned ALF, so...
It's worth saying. ALF gets a cold open. I mean, I wish they'd make the mind up. There were no cold open last time, open before that.
Yeah.
But we have a lovely opening scene, don't we?
With some excellent cat acting. I don't know how they managed to do it. I'm assuming it was drugs, but the cat is outstanding.
Yeah, ALF is hypnotising Lucky, the house cat. And he does sort of do a sort of, oh, I'm sleepy, I am drifting off kind of face. And it's like, I don't want to know how they got that.
It was either drugs and a piece of string that a sturgeon pulled off screen to get the cat fall over, or they were there for 10 hours just waiting for the cat to fall asleep before they could start the episode.
I suspect the former, because the 80s. Nice bit of banter, Alf and Willie up front.
This is my top Willie moment of the episode. Again, not a lot of Willie. I don't want to come in with my top Willie too soon.
No, nobody does.
But the way he comes in straight away and tries to de-hypnotise the cat by clicking his fingers, it's a lovely, natural, beautiful moment. Like, it's a sort of thing, like he expected ALF to hypnotise the cat.
He's bought into it.
And he's expecting that clicking the fingers would de-hypnotise the cat. It's a lovely example of the symbiosis between ALF and Willie and the relationship they have at this time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, he has bought into ALF, but he still doesn't know everything about him, what he can and cannot do.
Yes.
You know, if he can mystify cats, you know, that he might be able to. It seems like it's working.
ALF's going out of his way to make them think he can hypnotise cats, though. I mean, even if he is just kidding around, he kids around quite a lot, and even when the joke is long dead.
And not only that, he keeps having to say he's joking.
Yeah.
This is a joke in multiple episodes so far. And I would say in this episode, ALF is an even bigger knob. I thought it was quite an irritating person, yeah. Melmacian, in the last one. But this one, he's trashed the house and eaten everything, including Gulp, possibly the cat.
That's the plot, ladies and gentlemen. That's the plot.
How can one alien be so irresponsible?
I wasn't irresponsible. I was hungry.
Did you eat everything in the house?
Oh, I don't think so. Oh, wait a minute. Here's something. Who wants a cookie?
I do.
I'll split it with you.
And the family blame him straight away for eating the cat.
Fair enough, because he's kept saying he's going to eat the cat. So
yes,
that's and ALF getting a bit...
A lot.
ALF getting a bit indignant about it. He doesn't need to. He should realise what he's done.
No, he says he makes a lot of eat cats jokes. Especially after the thing he's eating the cat. Like, at that point, he doesn't go, no, this is the time for seriousness.
But... But you say he's trashed the house. He's basically moved some cushions and wonked some pictures around, really.
Yes, I'm not entirely sure how.
Or why.
Or why, you know. The eating stuff, yeah, it's understood. And we are told he does have multiple stomachs.
Yes, we learn that. There's a lovely line from Alf where they ask if he's eaten the cat food. He says, I draw the line at intestinal byproducts, which is another great line you wouldn't normally get in a mainstream sitcom in 1986.
No, I can't imagine Cousin Balky saying it. Or who's the boss? I don't know. I don't know who's in that. But we get to what I would consider the most impenetrable pop culture reference of the week early.
Yes.
In this week's one. And that is a reference. Well, there's two sort of ones.
Yeah.
It after the credits, it comes in with Alf doing the old time rock and roll thing, which I know is a parody of Risky Business with Tom Cruise.
Yes.
Which I've never seen,
right?
But I reckon I've seen 50 parodies of.
Yes.
Sliding in on his socks with just a shirt and a loose tie to that song.
Was this the first Risky Business parody? I mean, it's 3 years, I think, since Risky Business came out at this point.
Yeah, pretty early. It's pretty early. But it's also, it must be at a point where they go, people will get this.
But Tom Cruise is always also in his ascendancy at this point, isn't he, with Top Gun and stuff. So, it might be in people's minds.
Yeah, but it's then Al starts talking about something he saw on Merv.
Yes.
And that is, I think that tips it for me as the most impenetrable.
I put these both down. Risky Business? Merv. Is it Merv Griffin we're talking about here?
It is the Merv Griffin Show, which was a very long running American talk show with several series from 1962 to 1986 on various channels.
Right.
So it just finished because he does actually make reference to him. He's not on the air anymore, but presumably he probably was when they wrote the joke.
Please welcome a TV legend, Mr. Merv Griffin.
How are you, my friend?
Hello.
I'm honored.
Hello.
Wow, I hope you didn't mind me calling you TV legend.
It was
embarrassing?
No, that's okay.
Because I hate it when they call me that.
No.
Yeah, I do. Oh, watch it. You okay? Be careful. This is cable. We don't have insurance. Yeah.
Yeah. I put both of those down as possibles for the most impenetrable dated pop culture reference of the week. But I think I may have found an even more impenetrable pop culture reference later on. So we'll I'll keep my powder dry for the time being.
Please do. And if there was powder around, Alf would have eaten it. So we get this scene where the family goes straight away into blaming him for eating the cat. And again, we are three episodes in. We don't know Alf wouldn't.
Exactly. Yes.
And Brian cries.
Sort of.
Like, Brian is best pal in the world. Well, Brian wails.
It was my best friend.
Yeah. Because they find a hairball. And it's like, Alf's made of hair.
Yeah, he coughs up a hairball, and it's a very strange noise he makes. It's not a very Alfie sort of noise. It's quite a realistic hairball coughing sound. And I was quite alarmed by it, to be honest, when it happened.
Alf wouldn't eat Lucky. Would you?
I'm not saying anything until I talk to my attorney.
Now, look, maybe we're rushing into judgment here. Maybe Lucky just went for a walk. I'm sure it'll turn up.
It's a furball.
Lucky?
Don't look.
Hey,
this isn't Lucky. I was licking some jello off my arms, and I swallowed hair.
Yeah, I feel someone should have checked in on him, you know, just in case afterwards.
Yeah, so the point is, Alf coughs up a hairball and Brian starts crying and the house is in chaos. Lucky's missing. Everybody thinks Alf's eaten the cat. We don't know. Alf hasn't eaten the cat, but from the evidence of his behaviour, he could well have eaten the cat.
I mean, would you, as a younger person, would you have ever thought, yeah, he has. He might have done.
Oh, no.
No, you don't, do you? No, you just think straight away, no.
No, I don't think. I don't. No.
Alf's a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't know for definite that he hasn't, but I don't think there's any. I never suspected him. You know,
no.
So,
and I think they should have given him the benefit of the doubt and worked together to find Lucky, rather than the chaos that suddenly ensues.
Exactly, and so we get a great sort of admonishment of Alf. How dare you? So Alf goes away and he writes a letter.
Sort of. The pen sort of floating about an inch above the paper.
It's near enough.
He's got lovely handwriting, though. Lovely handwriting.
Yes, he does. Maybe that is like a major educational part of the Melmacian school system. You know, it'd be still
cursive handwriting.
Yeah, exactly. Beautiful, beautiful.
In the letter, I enjoyed. He got distracted by himself even whilst writing his goodbye letter, talking about the fugitive.
Well, yeah, he mentions a one-armed man, and I thought, oh, that's quite a niche reference, because again, this is. What, 7 years before the film?
Oh, yeah.
Of
yeah,
The Fugitive,
yeah.
Which now I just submit like stuff about one-armed man and all that. I think he's more in the culture here.
I think you're right, actually. It's an impenetrable pop culture reference then, as opposed to now, really, 35 years later.
Probably not in America. I suspect it was in syndication. But yeah, there's a lot of jokes about The Fugitive in this.
Yeah, good point.
And Alf will...
I will search relentlessly, taking time out, only to have love affairs with beautiful women.
Now, how did that make you feel?
I didn't really think about it, to be honest. I tried not to think about it. I moved on to the next scene. That's an unusual visual image, really.
I assume it's a reference to The Fugitive.
Oh yeah, one would assume it is.
But in Alf's mouth, the mouths of Alf's, you know. And then yeah, so it's like comedy letter, dramatic ending music. Mm. It's like, oh no. It's a very special episode.
You know, that's reminded me of something else that happened earlier in this episode on the cold open. They've done all the business with hypnotising the cat, and then Willy walks out, and it cuts back to Alf and the cat, and they sort of sit there for 2 seconds, and it gradually fades out, and there's no joke before the titles start. And I was expecting Alf to do some sort of wisecracking gag, but he doesn't. It just drifts into the titles, like it's a serious moment or something. I couldn't really put my finger on what was going on there. It's a very long fade out. Also,
yes.
it was a very long fade out, but then the risky business went on quite a longer than it should have done as well. So whoever was editing it, they were running short of material, I think.
Well, probably because it's got meat on it. Back reference. We get now to another scene, which is the family without Alf.
Oh, yeah.
And... as soon as Al's not there, it's just a dull family sitcom.
I mean, they've put on Kate and Lynn have put on some extraordinarily coloured jackets to try and brighten the thing up. Whilst Alf isn't there, Peach and Flamingo, ladies and gentlemen, apparently were very, very in 1986.
But then we get my top Willy moment.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
When Willy comes in, he's used his microscope to exonerate Alf by checking the furball.
Yes.
And to make more fugitive references.
He didn't need Lucky.
Poor Al.
It says he's gone out to find Lucky and to prove his innocence.
And his manhood.
This letter even has teardrops.
Grape-colored teardrops.
Willie put it in with a microphone. A microphone. Microscope.
Oh, I would love it if he came with a microphone and said, like...
That would have been lovely.
Alpha's gone. Do, 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 do.
That would have been a top Willie moment. But him running in with a microscope, it seemed quite normal to me. You think, oh, that's the thing Willie would do. He'd run in with a microscope. And it didn't strike me.
We've seen his big telescope.
Yeah.
So it's just natural following on.
There's a little telescope in the sitting room as well in the background. Did you spot that?
Oh, telescopes for days.
There's telescopes ahoy in this house, full of trinkets.
So, of course, then they realise, oh, it wasn't Alf after all. It's like, there's not a lot of... As the arc goes, they accuse him. Alf writes a letter, and then they realise he's blameless, which is a standard sitcom trope, I guess.
Yeah, they get through the plot efficiently and quickly, I think. That's the best thing you can say about it.
Yeah, especially when you spend 2 minutes on a risky business parody. I say parody. That implies...
Homage? Pastiche?
It's literally just him doing the thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
So Alf does go out and about, which is, of course, dangerous for Alf, into the real world.
Yes, the first on-location scenes, I believe.
And his first on-location scene is next to some bins. Because he's looking for Lucky, and obviously Lucky would love some bins.
Yep, he's talking to another cat, trying to find out Lucky's location. He's doing all the right things. He's doing the right things, basically.
He is. Although, he's looking in a window, and it's the creepy costume version again with the short person.
Yeah.
And it's a bit... I don't like
it. It's unnerving, yeah.
If you saw that at the window, you'd kick its head.
Well, this is the... And then the man from the pound turns up and... And yes. captures Alf, thinking he's a dog. Now, it strikes me then that if the man from the pound thinks Alf is a dog, then Alf could easily pretend to be a dog for the rest of the series and he wouldn't get caught by whoever he's hiding from, i.e. the government.
That's not unreasonable at all.
If everybody's going, oh, look, there's a dog, then you know what? Everything's fine. Just Alf comes out with us. Just bark a couple of times, Alf, and it'll be all right.
Yeah. It's a Mel Mackian... Dachshund or something, you know, like...
Yeah, fine.
We don't need more. This is the thing. So Alf gets taken to animal control, and there's loads of real dogs in there, so it made me very sad.
Yes, it was a bit sad, wasn't it? A bit depressing.
You know, and it's just, yeah, just lots of animals, and Alf going, what are you in here for?
He does a great bit of... He's allowed to do a great bit of prison business, you know, his prison gags and
prison
stuff.
Bounce, there, so that's yeah.
Chris Bantz, he does that. That's excellent, yeah.
And then a horrendous child comes in.
What did I say? Yes, are we doing Mel Mack's Fairy Perfection now? Because I put her as my...
Did you?
Okay. Top character. The way she just sort of came in and chewed through the scenery, shrieked her head off, and then disappeared. I thought she was fabulous.
You know, I didn't even look to see if she went on to any...
Well, I did.
Oh!
And... I've done this is my weekly research, ladies and gentlemen. Her name is Carrie Lorraine. Yep. She did very little. She'd just been in Poltergeist 2, and she went on to appear in a film called Dolls in 1986, and then seemingly packing it in. She continued her education as normal, and eventually becoming a criminal defence attorney.
Nice.
Now, the only interesting thing about Dolls is that it has Bunty Bailey in it, i.e. the woman from that Aha video.
Okay.
Tonight, in this storm, in this house, you will discover something you've never been afraid of before.
They're alive, aren't they?
Dolls. They want to play with you. Dolls.
Pleasant dreams. The director of it had done Reanimator, and he went on to write Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, I know, yeah. Yeah, because there's controversy about the guy who did Reanimator. They wouldn't let him direct it.
Is that right?
Because they didn't want a film from, a Disney film from the director of Reanimator.
Oh, my goodness me. I didn't know that.
But, I mean, child actresses that escape, I think, fair play to you. If you get out unscathed. Yeah. You know, well, especially in the 80s.
And like Herb from the previous episode, she's always got Alf on her resume. at parties, you know, anywhere she likes, she can say, I was that shrieking child who ate the scenery in an episode of Alf. And it's one you will remember because it was an early episode.
But yeah, absolutely. No, she is excellent. And I will fully give you that. You know what? I couldn't pick an exact one. I went with Lucky in the end for my MVP.
No. Yeah.
Just because of the early business, you know, the drowsiness. But the more I think about it, the more it upsets me. do you know what? I'll start singing a song in the animals.
Yes.
Yes,
I do. I looked that up as well because it was. I put this down as a possible for my impenetrable pop culture reference of the week, and it's On Wisconsin. Yeah. It's the fight song of the Wisconsin Badgers, the athletics team of the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Why?
I've no idea. I
assume Paul Fusco. Is Paul Fusco from Wisconsin?
Could be.
Or one of the writers, possibly. Either way. You know, it's the idea that you go, yeah, that'll do.
The thing is, my actual impenetrable dated pop culture reference of the week does come up at this point.
Okay,
where the pound guy, the child comes in with her father, who is a Hollywood producer.
Yes,
which excites the guy in the pound because he is an actor.
Well, it's set in California, so I mean, I suspect a lot of people are.
And he starts bigging himself up to this producer.
Listen, I'm appearing in a small workshop production of Extremities this weekend. If you're in the neighborhood, I'm the one in the fireplace.
Now, Extremities ladies and gentlemen, is an off-Broadway play. Which ran for 300...
What, it's a real thing?
It's a real... No, wait for this.
I can just hear you going through your files. Just, your big butch... Yeah.
This is a sound effect, ladies and gentlemen. It's a sound effect of files. It's an off-Broadway play, right, which ran for 385 performances. And I'm the One in the Fireplace refers to him, his character, being a would-be rapist. The plot of the play is that a young woman is attacked in her home by a would-be rapist, Raoul, and manages to turn the tables on him, tying him up in the fireplace.
Right.
Her roommates come home to discover the attacker bound, and they have a big sort of moralistic debate about whether they should be doing this because he hasn't actually committed a crime yet. So this is an extraordinary thing to be referencing in the third episode of ALF, quite frankly.
Yeah, 3 stars, some funny bits, you know, like, yeah. No, okay, I thought it was a comedy name plucked out of nowhere.
I'm the One in the Fireplace. It refers to the fact that he's playing a rapist in an off-Broadway play.
That is levels.
That's baffling, isn't it?
Yeah. For ALF, certainly.
Well, it shows a level of intellect that is probably not perhaps not necessary, but maybe it's just Paul Fusco showing off or something like that.
Well, yeah, that is possible. I'm thrown almost, but then again, it's we know what's going to happen at this point.
Yeah.
Lucky's been brought into the shelter, we think.
We think, yes.
And Alf makes a break for it.
And then they do a little sort of... they could have had a lovely chase scene there, sort of a Benny Hill-style chase scene as they all run out after each other.
No, because it would have involved the short person in the costumes, little legs again. It would have been weird.
The way they exit the Animal Pound, I'm thinking they filmed a chase sequence and didn't use it.
You think?
Yeah.
We'll have to check the ALF boards, aren't we, after? for hidden lore.
Mm.
And then, yeah, ALF gets back up and goes, hey, look... It's Lucky I brought it back, and then...
It turns out it wasn't Lucky after all.
No.
And it was all for naught, because Lucky had been in Mrs. Ockmonock's basement.
The prick.
Yeah.
It's clearly the same car.
Yeah, just a bit more dishevelled.
Mm. So, they say, oh, now we've got 2 cats, and then Alf goes, well, I'll do a big old eat of this one, don't you?
And we don't know if he does eat the cat, do we?
Oh, no.
We're then left to a post episode scene where he's feeding Lucky ice cream.
Yes, and rather sinisterly saying, "I could do out to you right now." You know, no one would talk to me for it. It's like double jeopardy.
I tell you what. Another thing I made on my notes here. He refers to himself as the old alpha.
He does.
For, I think the second time couple of episodes. So he's already very satisfied with his nickname. He's very settled into his
even
role.
Even though we've established it's not his name.
Mm. It's not his name, ladies and gentlemen.
No. But, you know, he's going with it.
And he seems very happy to be Alf.
I mean, I suspect it's like the episode of Only Fools and Horses where they bring back someone accidentally and call him Gary because Gary's the only word he can say. For a reason we never find out, by the way, because this is the point where John Sullivan's given up. like you can imagine, that there's time we haven't seen on screen. He's been saying a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's Gordon. And they just keep going, yeah, so Alf, how are we doing? It's like, yeah, all right, yeah, I'm Alf. Yeah, I'm Alf. I'm Alf now. Okay, yeah, fine. You know,
he's just given in, really, hasn't he?
He has. We all. But we'll always have Alfs.
Yeah.
So, I would say an odd episode.
It sets up Alf's personality a bit. The cat eating business. You know.
I guess, but I mean, we don't really establish that. Maybe this is. They had to put it in early to go to the kids. No, he won't.
Could be, yeah.
But he won't.
Actually, yeah, could be.
Sort of hiding the violence.
Hiding the violence.
Yeah. The cat based endangerment.
Hiding the violence, the true story of Alf.
Oh, did they ever do a true life movie about Alf? Did they do one about Willy going off the rails?
Let's look into it. We could do a very...
We will, in a future episode.
We could do a very special episode. Max Wright's troubles.
Mental decline. He's dead, isn't he? He's dead, isn't he?
Yeah. Long dead.
Yeah, it's all right. So, just checking. I don't want him writing in. Because, you know, obviously he'll start making references about a one-armed man. Back reference to a back reference.
Oh, dear. There is one more thing about this episode, though. We don't get the closing theme music. We get Bob Seger again. As if we hadn't had enough risky business earlier on. The end credits are another broadcast of old-time rock and roll.
That's the thing now. It's like references could live longer, you know, and not be completely dated. Like now, whatever's a meme today will be forgotten next week.
Yeah.
You know, the world moves on, but you can go, hey, remember that film from 3 years ago? And people go, yes, and it is hilarious what you are doing right now on my screen. Maybe Alf can revive the career of Bob Seger or Bob Saget. Not that one. Probably. Are they both dead?
I don't know.
I'm bailing.
I don't have this information at my fingertips.
I refuse. Until next time, wherever you are.
Stop. There's one interesting thing I've just remembered about this episode.
You can't.
I've
locked off the door for memories.
I'll do this as a pause, and you can decide whether we keep it in the episode. And then I'll do a pause.
No. With all of this is going in. Because it's hilarious.
I thought, are they talking about Merv Griffin? And I looked up Merv Griffin, and
look at him.
Please,
I'm trampling on your.
That's beneath you, and that's too lowbrow for what is a high.
That's very beneath him.
This is a high class podcast, quite frankly, and that level of.
Sorry, yeah.
Merv Griffin made an album in 1966 with Arthur Treacher, whoever he was, called "Songs of the British Music Hall." And it was called Arf and Arf, i.e. half and half, but with no H's, i.e. Alf and Alf. I thought that was quite interesting. Not interesting enough to derail your end of the episode.
No, it was, because you've reminded me that Arthur Treacher was a sidekick to Merv Griffin.
Oh, is that right?
British fella. And there are several branches in America of Arthur Treacher's fish and chips.
Is there really?
Yes, there is.
Well, this is...
I'm glad, you know, and that's the true ending. That's the true fable moral of this episode.
Perfect.
Purr like a cat.
Yeah. Perfect.
Bye.
Now, you don't know who you're looking at. Now, have a look at me. I'm a bit of a knob, I am. Belong to royalty.
I'll tell you how it came about. He married Widow Birch, and he was King of England when he toddled out of church. Outside, the people started shouting,
"Hip hooray!"
Said, "I'll get down upon your knees, it's coronation day." "Hora, I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Henry the Eighth, I am. He got married to the widow next door. She'd been married 7 times before. Everyone was a Henry. She wouldn't have a Willie or a Sam.
Okay. There you go. What are you going to name him?
What's your name?
Keith.
Not Keith. Let's go down.
Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome.